Today on Maine Calling, Magic the Gathering soars in popularity. Fans of Magic the Gathering eagerly anticipate the release of 6 new decks in 2025, and they are buzzing about the news that Kaladesh has been renamed Avishkar. Did that sentence make any sense to you? If so, you are likely one of Magic's 50 million players. If not, well, you might soon be. Magic the Gathering, a strategic trading card game, came out in 1993, and currently most of its players are under 45, but its community is growing every year. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, as part of our Passions and Pastimes series, we'll learn about this billion-dollar phenomenon and why such a variety of people, from actor Seth Rogen to incoming Vice President J.D. Vance, are drawn to its world. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible in part by Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn more at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal Downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. It seems that the world is divided into those who have not heard of Magic the Gathering and those who are really into it. And there are more than 50 million people who are really into it. Today, we're going to learn about Magic the Gathering, why it's so appealing, and how to play or learn to play in Maine. This show is part of our Passions and Pastimes series. Joining me, Roxanne Bruce, who is owner of Shire Town Gaming in Ludlow, which is near Holton, and Brendan Hill, owner of Crossroad Games in Standish near Sebago Lake. We invite you to join the conversation. Are you a fan of Magic the Gathering? Are you interested in learning? You can send us an email, talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. And I want to thank my colleague, a shout out to my colleague, Kurt Chadbourne, for suggesting this topic. Brendan, I'm going to start with you. For those people in the audience who are listening right now and thinking Magic the Gathering, what, and why are they doing a show on it? Tell us what you tell people who you run into who have no idea what we're talking about.
So that is, that's a
complicated question. How would you describe it?
Yeah. So Magic the Gathering is at its core a card game, cards similar to trading card games. And you construct decks and play against each other. There are two big components to Magic the Gathering. One of them is the play aspect, and one of them is the collecting aspect. Magic the Gathering was the first game to incorporate like the collectability of baseball cards into the mechanics of the game itself. And it is over 30 years old at this point.
Over 30 years old. Roxanne, why is it so popular? Why has it risen above? I understand it's Hasbro's biggest brand and hit $1 billion in sales a couple years ago. Why?
I think there's a few key aspects. So really, if you're, our youngest players are like 12-ish, but it's easy to understand. There's a lot of different formats, so you don't have to play the same way every time. It's kind of user-friendly. And then the point of entry, you could spend $20 to start playing, or, you know, if you're competitive, you're gonna spend thousands. But for the most part, anybody can start playing the game. It's easy to read. It's easy to understand. The pictures are amazing. Like, the artwork itself is just gorgeous. And Wizards hires artists to do each card. And it's a super fun process to watch.
Okay. So, Roxanne, I understand the last time you were on Maine Calling, you were talking about Dungeons & Dragons. Is Magic the Gathering somehow related to Dungeons and Dragons? Is it sort of a next generation? Does it appeal to the same group?
It definitely appeals to the same group. I think the big difference is Dungeons and Dragons, you're making it up as you go along and hot chaos everywhere, versus Magic the Gathering, like you built a deck, you've created a world, it's your little bitty universe that you get to control. So, yes, they're similar, but no, not exactly the same.
Brendan.
Can I add it? Can I add into that? So Dungeons and Dragons and Magic the Gathering are actually both owned and published by Wizards of the Coast, which is a subsidiary of Hasbro. Dungeons and Dragons is older than Magic, but a lot of the design and designers that work in Magic also love Dungeons and Dragons. So there's quite a bit of crossover. Both are fantasy-based games, although like Roxanne said, Dungeons and Dragons is a cooperative, very narrative, imaginative game, whereas Magic the Gathering has some of that, but not as much. It is more of a technical, strategic game.
Okay, so I'm going to stay with you, Brendan, and we're going to try to explain how it's played. I understand that there is something called a multiverse, and there are creatures, and there are formats. So start there, and then I'll have Roxanne follow up on what you start with.
Okay, so the basic narrative that is depicted in a game of Magic the Gathering. So if you and I were playing a game, Jennifer, we would take on the roles of spellcasters or wizards or sorceresses, witches. In Magic speak, they're called planeswalkers.
Would we have
And
names?
we y yes, you could make up a name, or you could just be called Jennifer the World Destroyer, whatever.
Okay, so I'm a planeswalker when I
You're a
play.
planeswalker when you play, and the cards that you play with are represent the creatures that you summon, your allies, the spells that you cast, the places that you do battle, and that power to cast that magic is drawn from the land, which is also represented by cards. The basic mechanics that function in the game is it's a race to see who can reduce their opponent from 20 life, which is where you start, to zero. So you do that by attacking with creatures, casting spells, and that is the core sort of game loop that Magic depicts.
Okay, so Roxanne, do you actually win in one sitting, or is this something that goes on for days and days? And also, how many people play together?
So that's a tough one, and I told Brendan about it too. So some of the magic formats, it's one versus one. Some of the magic formats, it's two versus two or four people in the group and you have one winner. When I started playing magic, there were 15 of us that played all together and we treated it more like D&D and storytelling than we did like competitive magic. Yeah, I think that was your question.
Yeah, so you said when I started there were 15. I want to know your origin story, Roxanne. When did you start?
So I get to freshman year of college in 1997, and my classmate, let's just call him a classmate, the most wonderful human being I've ever met. He's like, "You're not making friends." I'm like, "No, I'm kind of a dork and I'm not real good at this." And he's like, "Well, why don't you come play a game with us?" And I was like, "Cool, I love games." So we sit down like in the music department and he brings out all these cards. And of course, I'm falling in love with the artwork. I'm like, "Look at this." He's like, "Okay. Deep breath." And then we learned to play, and he teaches me how to play. And I got so excited. And we would call everyone in the music department together, and we'd all have decks. And unlike Magic today, where we were like trying to kill everybody, back then we were like, "Look at this awesome creature I got out." And then, after about an hour, hour and a half, we'd finally kill each other so we could start over. But
And Brendan,
Can
what
I?
about you? How'd you get started?
So I also started in college. Mine was a couple years earlier. I've been a gamer all of my life, and Magic is just, for me, was another sort of new hot game. And we got together in college and played, and then a couple years later, I opened my shop. I want to point out what Roxanne touched on. I think the magic, so to speak, within Magic the Gathering and games like it is its ability to sort of be the icebreaker for people to gather and connect into groups, into social groups. That's what gaming does so well, is provide sort of an innocent throughway between two people that are strangers, a common set of rules and something that you can be excited about together.
All right. Well, joining us is one of those who is excited about this. This is Ben Muser. He has been playing Magic the Gathering for 25 years. He's a political scientist and international relations scholar. Ben, thanks for calling in. I'll ask you, how did you get into this?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jennifer. I first got into it, as I think a lot of kids do, because my older brother was playing, and he taught me when I was maybe 9 or 10 years old. He was a bit older. And at first it was neat because it was something that my older brother was doing, and then it was something that I could kind of own. And then it just became something that every day at school I would bring my decks and my cards, and every chance we get, me and my friends would be playing.
So for 25 years, you've stuck with it. What is it about the game that you enjoy so much?
Well, I mean, this goes to something that Brendan was just saying. I've been playing for 25 years, but not always consistently. And what's always brought me back is connecting with people, new friends and old, where, you know, you meet new people and you're starting to find what your common interests are. And maybe you haven't played Magic in a few years and you start realizing, oh man, I played Magic. Hey, so did I. And then that becomes the kind of thing that you start connecting on. And so, you know, the first week of college, I started forming a group of friends around people who had all played Magic when they were 10 and maybe hadn't when they were in high school because it wasn't as cool or something. And then that became something that we did for 4 years together in college. And then it was the same thing in my early 20s with new friends in New York. So, you know, the social aspect was something that always kept me coming back again and again and again.
So does the fact that you've played for 25 years, does that mean you have a really killer deck?
As someone who's played for 25 years, I have built a collection and then sold it a number of times. And so now I don't have a collection at all for the most part. Cause I think I don't build a collection as much. I will say what I most enjoy. I think Roxanne was talking about the many formats that you can play with Magic. And my favorite format is to not have a deck at all, and is to have a set of cards on the table where you and your friends, or sometimes strangers, draft is what it's called, where you pick a card and you pass the cards that you're holding to someone else. They pick a card, etc., and you build a deck as you're going in real time with each other. And when you do that, you're not bringing in your expensive card. You're not bringing in something that you've built beforehand to be super powerful. It's just kind of making strategic decisions on the fly. And it's kind of fun and competitive and collaborative. And that's my favorite thing to do.
I understand you're teaching your nephew how to play, and we're going to talk to him in just a minute. But I want to ask you, how hard is it to teach?
You know, Sasha will probably be able to tell me better than will probably be able to say better than I. I think the joy of Magic is that there are these complex structural rules that you have to get a handle of. And there's no easy way to do that without saying, oh yeah, by the way, there's also this rule. Oh yeah, by the way, this also happens. By the way, this also happens. But once you get those basic structures, all you have to do is just look at a card and it will tell you what it does. And so this is part of why I think why people love Magic so much, is that it's really flexible, is that once you get the structure of just how a turn works and how a game works, then every single card can just do whatever it says it wants to do. And then there's a million different play styles, a million different ways to win and to lose and different play formats. And so I think it's a matter of teaching a couple basic ground rules and then letting them just discover it with the cards.
All right. Well, I'm going to talk to Sasha now. Sasha, thank you so much for joining us. Is it okay that you're missing class right now?
Yeah.
Yeah. What grade are you in?
I am in fifth.
Okay. So why were you interested in learning Magic from your Magic the Gathering from your uncle?
Well, honestly, like once, I guess he came over to my house to have dinner and we were kind of talking and he was like, oh, I should teach you. And a couple months later, we were in a different place and then he taught me and kind of played our first game. We didn't actually finish it, but it was going pretty well in my direction.
It was.
Is that why you didn't finish it?
No, we didn't. Fine.
I see. So what would you say, Sasha? Is it hard to learn? You're in fifth grade, what, 10 years old?
Well, from what Ben said, these are the decks that he's teaching me with are not very good, are not like the easiest teaching decks, but honestly, it's really fun and it's pretty simple with not much work.
What do you like about it, and do you think that playing is good for you?
I just like the complexity of it. I like how different cards do different things, and instead of like all cards doing like this, that, instead of one card's way over there, one card's there. That's what I really like about it.
Yeah, so do you have any good Magic the Gathering stories? I mean, obviously, you've already told us that you weren't able to finish a game, but it was going well for you. Has anything else funny happened or anything that stood out that you want to tell us about?
We did finish a game after that.
A couple weeks later, he came over back to my house and we played another game and I kind of crushed him. I had this one overpowered card that he kept having to block, and then I had another card that would just get him.
Roxanne
I
has a
had
question for you. Go ahead, Roxanne.
Hey, Sasha. So I play rats. That is the theme that I absolutely love to play with. Do you have a theme that you've built your magic decks around?
Well, I've only played two games. I haven't started building decks yet, and the only deck I've used is red. But that's
Ah.
a good deck, and it has some good cards in it.
Okay.
Nice.
Do other kids you know your age play Magic?
There's a couple kids in my class, like a year or two older than me, that definitely play Magic, yes. And my teacher does too.
Okay, and I'm going to turn a question back to Ben. Ben, do you think it's good for you, or you shouldn't even think of it that way? It's just something fun to do and with your friends.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think yeah, I think it's very, very good for you. I think it's a complex strategic game that sometimes you have to sit and think about your turn for several minutes on end to kind of figure out what you're doing. But also I think it's just tremendously fun and it's a great pastime. I mean, one thing I'll add is about whether it's hard to teach. Something that's I mean, Sasha's a really fast learner and brilliant, but the things that I think to us as adults seem like a lot of rules are a lot more intuitive than we might think to someone learning the game at Sasha's age. And I think, I picked up really fast when I was 9 or 10. So it's been really fun to teach.
Okay, so if somebody's listening to this and they are not 9 or 10 or 15 or 20, but maybe on the maybe newly retired on the other end of their life experience, you think they'll pick up on it?
I mean,
Roxanne? Okay. Yeah, I'll let you go, Ben, and then
sorry.
Roxanne, go ahead.
Well, briefly, I'll say, I mean, among the friends who I've played with over the last 15 years, a number of them just got into it in their mid-20s. So there's a huge range of people I know.
Okay, Roxanne.
I really love cooperative playing. So if I have a brand new player who's never played before, I put them with a seasoned player and they play the same deck. But like the seasoned player will give pointers to the new player. And we've had 60, 70-year-olds come in to play and I'll sit them with a 15-year-old. And it's just like the most beautiful conversation that happens. And yeah.
Yeah, I love things that are that join generations. Brendan.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I think card games like this and games like this are seen as a young person's game, but that is only, I always say that it's a young person at heart. Like if you enjoy gaming, it doesn't matter how old you are. We have customers that are Sasha's age, all the way up into retirement age, that play and engage with games like Magic on a regular basis.
Well, before we let you go, Sasha and Ben, wondering if you have anything to add. Sasha, anything you'd say to someone who has never heard of this and is thinking about trying?
I'd say that it's a really fun game that is worth learning. And with a little bit of time, a little bit of effort, you could probably get a good game going if you have good decks. Even if you have two bad decks, if they're equal, probably.
Well, thank you all. Sorry to have to send you back to class. That was Ben Muser and his nephew Sasha. Ben is a political scientist who's been playing Magic for 25 years, and he is now teaching Sasha, who is 10 years old. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We're learning about Magic the Gathering and what makes it the most popular trading card game in the world. This is part of our Passions and Pastimes series. With me, Brendan Hill, owner of Crossroad Games, and Roxanne Bruce, owner of Shiretown Gaming. Share your comments and questions with a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org. you can send us a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Before we go to the calls, and there are lots coming in, I just wanted to sort of make a note and ask you all about the fact that we have been talking about physical cards. We've been talking about sitting around a table, face-to-face with people and playing, but that's not the only way to play, right, Roxanne? There is a way to play this online.
There are apps for your phone. You can play online, and it is enjoyable. I will not say that it is not enjoyable. There's a threshold to learning, though, online. It kind of forces you into one way of learning, so that's great for some people. I personally love the in-person, face-to-face aspect versus being on my phone. I think we spend so much time on the computer, so much time on social media, so much time like logged in, that we're missing a lot of the human contact we used to have.
All right. And Brendan, would you have anything to add to that?
I think I agree with Roxanne, but I'm also biased. I own a game shop, right? So there is a digital way. The way is it's available on your phone. It's available on your desktop. It's called Magic Arena. It is actually a very good way to learn the game, especially for people who have social anxiety, right? I've taught a lot of people how to play Magic, but if you are an anxious person, learning something from someone else directly can be a barrier. So one of the great things that Magic Arena offers is a way to experience the game and sort of learn the ropes by yourself. And for some people, that is a big win.
And one thing I learned looking into this is that the way you all sell this in your local shop, one of you up near Holton, one of you in Standish, is the way that most people buy these cards, that even though you can order them online, it's been designed to be a network of small gaming shops and to build community. And I think that's really interesting in 2024.
Yeah, the friendly local game store model, which has been around for a long time, is really about propping up financially with a retail section, a gathering place that people can get together and learn these games and share space together. And that model, that retail model, especially 25, 30 years ago when Magic was coming about, is a pretty rare thing. And it still exists. Maine is one of the highest number of game stores per capita in the United States.
Wow. We'll go to Austin, who's calling from Georgetown. Hi, Austin. Go ahead.
Hi, guys. How are you this morning?
Good.
Yeah, so I'm calling. I volunteer at an organization called the Midcoast Youth Center, located in Bath. And we actually have a Magic the Gathering club that I host with kids there, whose age range from anywhere from 8 to the early teenage years. And I think Magic itself is a really good game to like pass on to that next generation, because I think there's a lot of taboo about those games, and it's cool to see that there's still interest at that youth level.
That's great. So at a youth center in Georgetown, is that where it is?
No, Bath, Maine.
Bath, Maine. Okay. Yeah, just across the bridge. Wonderful. Thank you, Austin. I'm wondering, I don't see any calls or emails about this yet, but I'm wondering if there are libraries that sponsor or create space for these clubs. Yes, you're both nodding for that. Thank you, Austin. Let's see. We'll go to Joshua, who's calling from Augusta. Hi, Joshua. Go ahead.
Hi. So I'm 32, been playing Magic since about 2000. I just celebrated 20 years of friendship with a friend with a solid day and a half of Magic. It's kind of an interesting time to be a Magic the Gathering fan. I love the game. One thing that's been kind of difficult lately is sort of some interesting business practices by Wizards of the Coast and Hasbro that is sort of, I love Magic and Dungeons and Dragons, but be interested to see what your guests think about, like, I mean, there have been some scandals lately, if you're plugged into that kind of space, as far as like, I'll let them talk about it, I guess.
Great. Well, Joshua, before I turn to them, I just want to go back to something you said. You said You celebrated friendship with a day and a half of playing. You played for a day and a half straight.
Basically, we went out and grabbed breakfast. If I can, I'm going to also shout out longtime game store in Augusta, Game On.
Game On is great.
We played at his apartment in Brunswick, but yeah, we played for basically a day and a half straight minus eating and sleeping.
I love it. Okay, thanks so much. And I'm going to turn to our guests for your question about some of the controversies within this world. I read just this morning that one of the, is it decks or metaverses or whatever you call them, has been changed. The name has been changed. Roxanne?
Yeah, so the latest has been very interesting. So when we started our game shop 3 years ago, it was super easy. We signed up real quick. We became Wizards approved. We were on the road to premium. And then things just kept getting more and more expensive. And I don't know if anyone is from the county, but you don't have $50 to throw on a couple extra cards here and there. So we moved our model more towards selling singles. It was just easier for us, but that doesn't get us the Wizards premium. They don't like that. They want you to sell packs and boxes and decks. But yeah, some of the practices they've been doing lately aren't as conducive to what Brendan and I grew up with.
So the cost, they want you to buy whole decks of cards that can be $50 instead of singles, which would be much less.
So can I speak a little bit to this?
There's
no doubt there has been controversy, but I think a lot of where that controversy stems from is Magic the Gathering and games like it, Dungeons and Dragons, have been, to the people who love them, they love them. And they form a very central part to their social lives. That is at direct tension with a publicly traded company that needs to make decisions based on profit margins. And as Magic and games like it have, and quite frankly, geek culture itself over the last 25, 30 years has become much more mainstream, there is more and more opportunity to make money within the sphere. And that means that choices are not necessarily made the way that they used to be made. They used to be made, what is the best for the community? How do we get as many people into the same room? Let's do this for fun. And that isn't necessarily how Wizards is always thinking about it. I think if you talk to the people at Wizards, they would disagree because they're all gamers as well. But there have been controversies in the last couple of years based on what is seen as choices for money over choices for the health of the hobby, if that makes sense.
You said that very, very well.
Thank you.
Joshua, thank you for calling in. We'll go to Portland and Harry. Hi, Harry. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks, Jennifer. Longtime listener, first time caller. I appreciate you taking my call. I have a two-part question for Bruce and Roxanne. First, you guys kind of got at this already, but with the rise in high-cost cards and premium releases, do you think the game is leaning a bit too far into a pay-to-win model that risks alienating newer players? Secondly, there's this growing trend of proxying cards, which is, you know, getting cards printed, counterfeits, so you can play with very expensive cards for very little money. It makes the game more accessible, but I'm curious how the speakers think it impacts the long-term integrity and community around Magic.
That's a great question, Harry. Pay to win, or sort of the financial model of Magic the Gathering and games like it, has become potentially more expensive. And the important word I say there is potentially, meaning that the companies have very deliberately raised the ceiling to like stratospheric levels on the height that a customer can spend money. However, I would push back by saying that you can also, they supply stores like Roxanne and mine with free decks that you can come in, anyone can come in, and we can just give you Magic decks. They're totally free. And they are complete Magic decks, and you can play with them. So the barrier to entry is zero. And it depends, obviously, the peak is much higher. I think that goes back to what I was saying earlier, where companies like Hasbro have found out that there's simply money to be made that wasn't being made before. And thus you have the introduction of $100 booster packs and things like that, which are very expensive, but optional for the experience of the game.
And so we might do something a little bit different than Brandon. So the first time you play, you absolutely get the free deck. You get to learn. We'll give you a pack of cards. Like, here, let's get you going. Let's get you started. But then we have a range of decks from like basic to pretty advanced that we have for rent for $5. So like, if you want to come play Friday Magic, but you can't afford that $800 deck, well, toss me $5. You can use it for the game. We also twice a year do an Anything Goes event where I don't care what cards you bring. Like, one person made up their own My Little Pony cards and brought them in. Yes, I require you have them based on actual Magic cards, but yeah, Brendan.
Oh, I wanted to also mention about proxies. Harry had mentioned, and what a proxy is simply, so Magic the Gathering are simply cards. They're high-tech cardboard. So you can, with a printer, just print out proxy cards. Some of these cards are hundreds, if not thousands of dollars a card. So people will simply mock up their own. They're called proxies, and they'll use those in the game. Do I think that is detrimental to Magic as a hobby? I think that is twofold. It makes it harder for businesses like Hasbro, all the way down to the friendly local game stores, to stay in business, right? So that's one aspect of it. If you want a thriving friendly local game store scene, you need to patron your friendly local game store. That's just the way it works. And all the way up to Hasbro. If they can't make money making Magic, then they will stop making Magic. However, proxies do make the game much more accessible to people who can't afford these big games or might not want to spend that kind of money. And that continues to proliferate the play of the hobby, which is good for the hobby.
All right. Go ahead, Roxanne.
Oh. No, I was going to say, I also find, like Brandon maybe would concur, when people use a proxy a few times and they find out they're in love with that card, they'll save up and buy the actual version of that card so they can use it for competitive games.
Harry, thanks for your question. Now, Roxanne, you say for competitive games, is there a circuit? Are there professionals?
There is. Yeah, I think Brendan hosts one of the tournaments.
Yeah, over the years, Magic has gone through many, many phases of competitive Magic. And there is such a thing as a competitive Magic player, a professional Magic player who makes their living simply playing Magic. Wizards of the Coast has gone through several iterations of their premium level tournaments. It used to be called the Pro Tour. The Pro Tour was held in spots around the world, and top prizes would range from $25,000 to $100,000 in cash. So multiple of these events would happen each year. So you'd have players that their job was simply to know the game of Magic and then travel around and compete at a very high level. Obviously not a common thing, right? But it is akin to a professional athlete.
Okay.
And we do have small tournaments here in Maine.
Yeah.
And is this the kind of thing, like if somebody's watching, you know, a chess tournament, they might be able to stream it online and watch it. Do people stream and watch Magic the Gathering tournaments?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. They I think one of the Pro Tours was on ESPN way back in the day. And there are several very, they do very well on like Twitch and YouTube, where you can simply watch people play, and it's not necessarily competitive. It's just about the personality sitting down, playing a game, and talking.
Well, we're talking
about... love the YouTube one. Yeah.
We're talking about Magic the Gathering. We want to hear your Magic the Gathering story. Lots of questions coming in, you all, as we go to a break. But if you have one to add, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. If you're quick, you can send a brief email, talk@mainpublic.org, or find us on social media. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. What do you want to know about the game Magic the Gathering? My guests, both game experts, Roxanne Bruce with Shiretown Gaming and Brendan Hill with Crossroad Games. You can join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Quickly send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org or post to Facebook or Instagram. Here's a question from Jordan. I'd love to know if there are any other smaller trading games other than Magic that the guests are seeing gain popularity. Roxanne, you're nodding.
There's a lot. Obviously, Pokemon. Probably everybody knows Pokemon. The new Disney one is getting a lot of traffic. We have a zombie one that we play here at the shop. That one was released in 2009, I think. So it's a pretty old one that's just coming back around. But yeah, there's tons.
Okay.
Digimon. We'll go, yeah.
We'll go to Larry, who's calling from Milton, New Hampshire. Hi, Larry. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Three things quickly. One, Bitcoin is popular because people believe the price keeps going up. Two, why is this not just one more example of monetized friendship? Three, Pascal, all of humanity's problems stem from man's inability to sit quietly in a room alone. If you've got $20, send it down to a food pantry and get off the artificial reality. Thank you.
Sounds to me like Larry's a Magic the Gathering skeptic. What do you all have to say to that?
I can speak to some of that. I think that Larry, when he's talking about like Bitcoin, is talking about Magic being potentially in collectible games, collectibles in general, being a speculative asset, right? And there is certainly stuff, something to be said about that. When anything rises and falls in value based on simple popularity, you can get into some weird financial situations. Magic has that as well. So that is something to be careful of. When he talks about donating to a food bank, I volunteer at a food bank. I'm a big fan of food banks. I think that you can do both. I think that relationships, interpersonal relationships, are a necessity for people. And gaming is simply one tool that allows people to connect. So I would push back a little bit against that.
We'll go to Teddy, who's calling from Clinton, Massachusetts. Hi, Teddy. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say that I've been going to Brendan's shop for probably upwards of 10 to 12 years at this point, among many other things.
Hey, Teddy.
And I kind of started where Magic has generally come my community and kind of social group at this point, where I go every Friday to my game store in Massachusetts. And I even started this at Brandon Shop many, many years ago. And it's gotten to the point where this large community and big events that you guys are talking about, where I think it was about 3 weeks ago, I went to a huge event in Pittsburgh where there were probably three to four different big events where it had like a $50,000 prize pool. And Magic, over the course of 30 years, has gotten that simply large. I think that it's really great that you can go from just being at your local game store, like Brandon's shop or anywhere else like that, and then get to something that big and even potentially do well just as a person from small town in Maine. Originally, I'm from Guam, though I'm in Massachusetts now. And I was fortunate enough, even at that big event a few weeks ago, to come in 12th. So that came with some monetary prizing, some goods, and some other things. And that event was a 1,200-person event, which is definitely on the larger scale of event these days.
Well, Teddy, thank you so much for calling and telling us about your experience. And I have to ask you, Roxanne, I've noticed that all the callers so far in the program have been male. And is this something you notice, that most Magic the Gathering players are men, or is this just a coincidence today?
I think it's a predominant geek and nerd culture thing that is starting to change. A lot of the players when I was young were men, but they were almost all willing to get women involved. So sometimes we run into gatekeeping, but for the most part, it's become super open. And I'm going to circle back to the food aspect for one quick second. Like at our game shop, We order pizzas. We cook food. Like, we want our players to feel comfortable, like they're at home. It works for D&D. It works for Magic. It works for Pokemon. Like, this isn't just a place you go, you spend money. This is a place you go, and it becomes your second home.
We'll go to Mark, who's calling from Bangor. Hi, Mark. Go ahead.
Hi. I was wondering if there's an equivalent version of Magic the Gathering on VR, or if there's no plans for it, or not currently on there, if there's any other equivalent games you'd recommend.
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked this, Mark. This came up when we did a show recently on gaming, how a lot of people think VR, virtual reality, isn't really taking off at the pace that was predicted. But generally, that's what they were talking about. How about specifically to Magic the Gathering? I'll go to you, Brendan. Do you know if there are plans to create a VR, or is there already a VR version?
So virtual tabletops are different than VR. When VR tends to be, my understanding of it is that, you know, it's involving all of your perception in an entire, like, all of your vision. Whereas a virtual tabletop might be a shared screen, not dissimilar to Zoom, right? Where you are sharing screens and voice with each other. So I know that there are programs that play Magic and many other games virtually, right? But nothing that is truly yet VR. Now, that being said, you know, these are incredibly popular licenses. And again, if there is money to be made in VR, Hasbro is going to explore it.
There was a Kickstarter that we signed up for that is turning D&D into a virtual reality game, but they're using mostly themes from Magic. So they're still in the pilot and testing, but I think that's going to use a lot of the same characters from Magic the Gathering, a lot of the same artwork, and then it will be virtual reality. But unlike when you're playing with the card game, more D&D style where you get to play the character and encounter stuff.
Mark, thanks for your question. Roxanne, I want to circle back to something. Earlier in the program, we heard from Sasha, who's 10, and I confess I've never seen a deck of cards, but I understand they can be kind of racy. Is there sort of an age that you recommend kids start out with them?
I always talk to parents. I don't recommend an age. I'll have 14-year-olds that maybe can't read, so I don't want to give them a deck with super intense language. But I don't like to play with under 9 years old. I also sort through the cards and make sure some of the more questionable artwork doesn't get in the hands of kids.
Brendan, same thing for you?
I think that is part of an evolution of the hobby itself. You had mentioned earlier about the heavy bias towards male players as opposed to female players. And I think that speaks to where this industry has come from. 50 or 60 years ago, it was largely retired military men playing war games, and it's evolved from that. And then over the last 10 or 15 years, we've seen a decided move to taking sexuality and questionable imagery and stuff out of the hobby because we want it to be much more inclusive. So yes, there are things that would be considered, I would consider them. I have a 16-year-old. Certainly when they were younger, I would have been like, we at least need to have a conversation about that. But that is happening less and less as the games evolve.
We'll go to Tim, who's calling from Boston, Massachusetts. Hi, Tim. Go ahead.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
So I'm a creator of a independent card game called Gudnak. We're trying to compete with giants like Magic the Gathering, obviously. I was wondering if the panelists want to comment on collectability as a good or a bad thing in these card games. New entrants like Star Wars Unlimited and Flesh and Blood are really pushing heavy into the collectability part, where some of the other entrants from maybe 5-10 years ago were trying out different models.
Yeah,
I'll start with the artwork. It's all about your artwork. Like, that's what makes a card collectible. And please do email me or send me information about your game. I'd love to learn about it. But yeah, if the pictures are good and they change, and like the model, the way that Magic is set up is you have a starter deck and then you build upon that. So the new cards you get still apply to the older cards you already have. And that's one of the collectibilities that that makes it useful to just keep going and getting more, versus if every time you bought one, it didn't apply to what you had before, it would be a tougher sell.
So I think that you're speaking of the old, well now, older, there was a model called a living card game, which a company put out to make games more accessible and taking them out of the collectability zone that like Magic and Pokemon and a lot of these card games that we're talking about are. If you are a game designer and you're questioning whether or not you want to make your game collectible, I think that that is a very important choice that you have to make in the design phase of the game, because a game that is designed around collectability has fundamental differences between that and a game that does not embrace collectability as its form. Neither of them are wrong. They just are an active choice.
All right, Tim, thanks so much for your question. Roxanne, we just have a couple minutes left, and I realize that I haven't asked you how your shop came to be and that you have a really great story behind it.
So we homeschool our kids, and I work with a local homeschool group and stuff, but we have always taught project-based learning. And so when my son hit his senior year and he's like, "Why, you know, what do you want your project to be?" Well, he loves Magic, and the game shop we did have in town had closed. And so he said, "Can we start a game shop?" I was like, okay, let's look at what we have. And like, if you look at the pictures and our progression, we literally started our shop with $1,500, you know, and there's not much on the shelves, but grew and grew and grew to eventually now where he, this year, since he's 18, is going to take over partially running the shop. And we added knife throwing and axe throwing and an archery range and like all these games. And then Brandon has met my kids because they come down for Warhammer, and it's just growing into this amazingly beautiful community of humans who are respectful and nice and like care about each other. It's something you don't see very often.
Okay. And Brendan, how did you get started?
So how much time do we have?
About I started, 3 minutes. Two and a half.
So I started playing games when I was very young with my grandfather. And from that age, I learned that games are simply a common language that you learn to then hang out. So you can meet someone, and if you don't know them, but you both know how to play cribbage, you can immediately have a connection. And from that, I started game clubs through junior high, high school, college, and then shortly out of college, I started my shop. Now, the name of my shop, or Crossroads, is about coming together. It is a common meeting place. The game Magic the Gathering, very pointedly, is about gathering together with your friends and having a shared experience, in this case, a card game. So that I opened my shop in 1999, not thinking that it would do much, and it's been now half of my adult, well, my entire adult life. It's,
well, 1999, that's a 25-year anniversary. Congratulations, Brandon.
It is. Thank you.
And has the spirit, has the kind of people who come changed, or is it really something that's pretty much the same through the generations?
I think that at its core, it's the same through the generations. And one of the things that I love about this gaming industry now, and something that I've witnessed in my lifetime, is that multi-generational aspect of it. My kid is 16. They go to Bonnie Eagle High School. I think five of the teachers grew up playing games at my shop, and now they're teaching. They, you know, they're teaching math and psychology, and they run clubs there. And that's where this stuff really gains legs. So we met Ben and Sasha. That is a common story where you have a hobbyist who's grown up loving these games and maintained friendships, and they want to share that with the younger generation.
Do you think in 25 years we're going to have three or four generations? Roxanne, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, sometimes we have the reverse. We'll have the kids that play with their friends at school, and the parents are like, "We need to spend more time together." And they're like, "Come on, Mom, come on, Dad." And, you know, they get in there and they're super uncomfortable, and they're in a room with a bunch of kids feeling left out. But to watch all the kids like gather around the adults and go, "Okay, you got to do this. And then we got to do this. And then you're going to kick butt if you do this." And it's amazing.
Oh my goodness, we're really out of time, but we never asked about what Netflix is doing. Is there going to be a Magic the Gathering TV show? Is that what's going on?
Yes. Yeah?
Okay. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned.
Thank you both for joining us today. Brendan Hill, owner of Crossroads Game in Standish. Roxanne Bruce, owner of Shire Town Gaming in Ludlow, which is near Holton. Today's sound engineer was Jessica Miller, and we want to thank our colleague, Kurt Chadbourne, who suggested today's topic. He's a Magic the Gathering enthusiast. Our theme song was composed by Mike Jandro. Main Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.